Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mary Neal. I'm here to talk to you about the incarcerated. Yes, this is the Human Rights for Prisoners March. And rather than starting a new show for you today, I want you to listen to a show we pre-recorded, the Daniel Listen Bigler Show. I just got off the phone with his grandmother, Miss Angela. He has a beautiful mother, Miss Valerie, and a sister too. And we're going to interview his grandmother next week. She told me that she taught her grandson to love God and to trust his son, Jesus Christ. And of course, you may know, or perhaps they've hidden it from you, but Daniel Listen Bigler was murdered for his faith in Jesus Christ down in Clay County Jail in Florida. We were told by one of the, I think it was several of the inmates who were incarcerated with Daniel, that as they drug him into his death chamber, where the restraint chair was, they jested about his faith in Jesus Christ. He asked for a pencil. I guess he wanted to write a complaint. The guards laughed at him and said, "Get God to give you a pencil then. Where is this God you talk about all the time? Where is he now? Where is your God now, Daniel?" As they beat him, as they sprayed him in the face with pepper spray, as they put a bag over his head, and it was said that they even sprayed pepper spray on a cloth or a pillow and put it under the hood where he could not breathe without breathing pepper spray. And they were jesting the whole while. "Where is your God now? Where is your Jesus you talk about all the time?" He was killed for his faith. Daniel Listen Bigler is a young martyr, 19 years old, Caucasian young man. I just talked to his grandmother. She's going to be on the show next week to talk to us about her grandson's faith in God, which she taught him to have. Here's the broadcast with his mother and sister.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, thank you for joining us today on Human Rights Demand. My name is Mary Neal. I am Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. We believe that no individuals should be persecuted, punished, incarcerated for reason of a common treatable health condition. And we also believe that people who have drug and alcohol dependencies are not helped, and society is not helped because they are incarcerated. We believe that sick people, whether they have addictions or whether they have mental illness, should be treated for their conditions and not punished. And so we want to thank you for joining us today. We have a tremendous show planned for you when we will present to you the wrongful death of Daniel Listen Bigler. That's Daniel Listen Bigler, who died in Clay County Jail at the age of 19. He died by suffocation while in a restraint chair. Daniel Listen Bigler was a young man who was handcuffed behind his back, who was sprayed in the face with pepper spray. And as he sought to free his airways of the pepper spray, he was spitting and coughing, and mucus was running from his nose. And they covered his head with a spit bag, like those that you saw prisoners wearing on photographs taken in Guantanamo Bay. They covered his face with a hood. and his mucous membranes were swelling. They walked him down the hall, and they secured this young teenager in a restraint chair. His back showed signs of tasering. We don't know if they tasered him after he was secured in the chair or not. It's very likely that they tasered him after he was handcuffed. They secured him in the restraint chair, which has been known to cause many deaths. As a matter of fact, we know that the restraint chair caused the death of Sean LaBert, who was a great entertainer. Anyway, Daniel Lissenbigler was secured to that restraint chair, and even though the guards were leaving the room and there was no more opportunity for him to spread saliva and mucus out of his nose on them, they did not remove the hood from his head. Daniel Lissenbigler strangled to death. He suffocated to death right there restraint chair. Daniel Lissenbigler died last March 2013. His wrongful death case is in litigation now. And we want to say that his death is not unlike other deaths that have happened and that have come to our attention recently regarding the mistreatment of mentally ill people in the state of Florida. We know that in Dade County Correctional Facility, a man named Mr. Darren Rainey, R-A-I-N-E-Y, was scalded to death. Guards dragged Mr. Rainey into a single shower, a small shower, and they turned on the hot water as high as it could go, and they scalded him so badly that his skin came off his muscle, and he died face up under scalding hot water in that tiny shower. One of the other inmates in that facility heard his screams. They heard him begging for his life, not unlike I imagine that Daniel Lissenbigler did in that restraint chair. But the guards are very cruel in many correctional facilities throughout America. It is said that Daniel Lissenbigler was in an observation area in the restraint chair that was right across from the guard station. So why was he not helped? Why did they not notice, oh, he still has that bag on his head. He's been sprayed in the face. He was complaining that he couldn't breathe. Let me go get that bag off his head. It doesn't matter that Daniel was right across from the guards. It doesn't matter that he was in clear view of them as he died. Because if an inmate could hear Mr. Darren Rainey screaming and begging in that hot shower, and his cries for help were ignored, I want you to know that the cries for help are sometimes ignored by corrections officers. So without any further ado, I want to welcome you again to Human Rights Demand and introduce you to Ms. Valerie. Ms. Valerie Lissenbigler. She is the mother of Daniel Lissenbigler, who was murdered in Clay County, Florida, jail. He was only 19 years old. He suffocated to death in a restraint chair. Welcome, Valerie. How are you today?
I'm good. And yourself?
I'm doing well, Valerie. And I want to give you our condolences again regarding your son's murder. And I want you to know that, unfortunately, you and your family has joined a growing family of Americans whose civil rights have been denied and they have been deprived of life. So I'm sorry about your son, Daniel Lissenbigler. He was a very handsome young man. I invite the audience to see a picture of him at the article that I posted for him at Dog Justice for Mentally Ill. It's called "And Then Daniel Lissenbigler Died." I input in that article an excerpt from an excellent article written by Susan Cooper Eastman at folioweekly.com. She wrote an excellent article about Daniel and about you and how his death has affected you and your family. And I'm so glad that you and your family are on air today to discuss Daniel's death, to discuss the kind of young man he was, to discuss your challenges as you strive for justice in the case of his wrongful death. I'm going to turn it over to you right now, and I also want the radio audience to know that if you call in, you will have an opportunity to comment and ask questions. Call in at 347-857-3293. Again, that's 347-857-3293. Please help Ms. Valerie Listen Bigler and her family by calling your friends, your relatives, your social networks. Let them know that we're on the air with the family of Daniel Listen Bigler, who was murdered in Clay County Jail in Florida. And please share this video after the broadcast. Share this tape, brother, at Human Rights Demand with your social networks. Go right ahead, Ms. Valerie. You speak first. We will let the audience comment and ask questions and speak. And I also invite families that have had similar experiences with wrongful deaths and brutality to call in and have your say also. So go right ahead, Ms. Valerie. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, and thank you for having me and my family. I'd like to thank everybody who is listening. It's been hell. It hasn't been easy. I'm still in shock. What I'd like to say is that Daniel was an amazing kid. From the first time I felt him move in my belly to first time I seen him start to crawl and then swivel around and sit up, to his first birthday that he started walking on and he never stopped. His dedication of being a cowboy when he was a little boy. He was a huge John Wayne, Clint Eastwood, Chuck Norris fan. You know, he used to say a real cowboy sleeps with his hat and boots on. So he was a cowboy for about 6 years. He raced methanol carts that ran 35 miles an hour from the time he was 5 till he was 11. And in that time, Daniel only did a half a year in first grade and a half a year in fourth grade, third grade to fourth grade, because he was advanced. We found out early on that he was advanced with numbers. He was doing trigonometry and calculus at 15. You know, he was a very loving kid. He was not a troublemaker as a kid. He, you know, he just wanted to be a kid. He loved life, and he had goals, and he had a future. And I know he was looking forward to when I got out of the work release program I was in. He was looking forward to us going up north and starting over, and being around his little brother Timothy, who he loves and adores, and his sister, Marissa, and all that was taken away from him. I know March 12th of 2013, I received a call at the work release center I was at that my son was found in his cell on a routine check, unresponsive from an unknown medical condition, and I hit the floor. And about a week later, other inmates, as they were being released or they were able to call their families. I know one inmate, after he had seen the newspaper article about, you know, Clay County sheriff's office representative also told the public that, too, that he was just found in his cell on a routine check, unresponsive from an unknown medical condition. So when this inmate read this the next day, the 13th of March, he wrote a letter to the state prosecuting attorney saying that's not what happened to that kid. And he described in full detail what had happened. Thankfully, other inmates had family that could call and they could, you know, get a hold of police abuse and file a report, because I was still unaware of how my son had actually died. I just thought he was found in a cell. So when they, when other inmates started coming forward and saying and describing in full detail how my son had died, I'd called, you know, to see if that was true or not, and I couldn't get an answer on how my son had died. I had to wait 5.5 months to get a coroner's report that confirmed everything that the inmate said and not what I was told by a robbery homicide detective who did not identify himself when he called the work release center, informing me that my son was just found in a cell on a routine check, unresponsive from an unknown medical condition. So now we had to file a federal lawsuit to try to get answers. On March 14th, I wrote my son, my dear precious son, Daniel, a promise letter. And I wrote, "This is my promise to you. I will get justice for you. I will miss you with every breath I take. I love you more than words could ever express. My sweet baby boy, your memory will never, ever die. I will fight and fight for you until my death, my last breath, leaves my body. You are my heart and my soul. I ache for the justice you will get. You, my son, are loved. I'm so sorry for your pain. I will get justice for you, my dear sweet son. I pray for your peace. I ask you, Lord, to give my son justice, your son. Lord, bring to light what was done in darkness. Amen." So that is my promise to my son, Daniel. I'd also like to read you an article about inmates' treatment criticized in Metro. Prisoner died in Clay Jail. His father said he was told son was restrained. I can't see that. I'm going to have my daughter read it because I can't see it.
Where'd you go?
Right there, just start there.
The father of a 19-year-old inmate who died Tuesday in the Clay County Jail that he was told his son was in a restrictive suit and a restraint chair when a deputy noticed something wrong. Considering bizarre behavior that led to Daniel and Tamiko Jr.'s arrest, he should have been treated for mental instability in a medical setting and not as an unruly prisoner, his father said Thursday. The 46-year-old Winston Bigler, who lives in Fort Pierce, said he has been told by two law enforcement officers that his son was in a restraint chair when he was discovered. One of the officers said the teenager was also wearing a suit designed to restrict movement. Apart from saying the 19-year-old was found unconscious by a guard making his normal rounds about 9 a.m. and that attempts were made to revive him, authorities said. They are not releasing additional information until an investigation is complete. Winston Bigler was on medication for hallucinations and other mental health issues during a 15-month jail sentence in Jacksonville that ended in November. That ended in November, Daniel Linz Miller Sr. said. Continue reading. You don't have other part of this?
Yes. Okay. Yes, and also, this was released on March 14th. It said, inmate death leads to FDL investigation. Green Cove Springs, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, is investigating the cause of death of a Clay County jail inmate who died in custody on March 12th. Daniel Joseph Linson Bigler, Jr., 19, was found unconscious when jail staff made routine rounds around 9 a.m., according to a Clay County Sheriff's Office spokesperson. Multiple detention personnel responded and performed CPR on the inmate in an attempt to revive him, said Mary Justino, Clay County Sheriff's Office representative. Their agents, along with those of Clay County Fire and Rescue personnel who transported him to Orange Park Medical Center, were unsuccessfully, and Linson Bigler was pronounced dead at OPMC at approximately 10 a.m., which we were already told that he was deceased by the time the EMTs got to him. He was unresponsive. He was deceased. Justino said it is standard procedure to call on the FDLE to investigate when an inmate dies in county custody. FDLE representatives will work in conjunction with CCSO detectives, the Jacksonville Medical Examiner's Office, and CCSO Detention Bureau staff to investigate what led to Linson Bigler's death, she said in a prepared statement. Linson Bigler had been living in a suite at the Stay Suites Extended Stay Motel at 1656 Wells Road when he was arrested March 2nd on one count of trespassing in an occupied structure and a charge of public indecent exposure. CCSO officials are trying to locate his next of kin as he had no relatives of record in Clay County. March 2nd, Linson Bigler was charged with allegedly going into a woman's room at the motel and knocking items off the table while yelling biblical scriptures. The victim stated she saw a white man with no clothing on running down the corridor of the second floor saying he could save everybody and he was God, stated the police report. Linson Bigler had been held on $5,004 bond and was awaiting trial, a March 14th arraignment. My son was robbed of his future. He was robbed of his dreams. He'll never get to have a driver's license, get married, have a career, a family of his own. What was done to him was unjust, and I want answers, and I'm not going to stop until I get answers, unless the good Lord comes and gets me. I love you, Daniel Joseph Linson Bigler, Jr. Rest in peace, my beloved son. I can't really go into too much.
Thank you so much, Valerie. Reading that letter that you wrote to your son, I tell you, I had to go off air and cry with you over the death of Daniel because this story is repeated throughout America over and over. People with mental disabilities, drug and alcohol addictions are treated as though they don't have a right to life. They're killed. They're killed doing lunacy arrests. They're killed in our jails and prisons. And it is usual and ordinary for our officials, law enforcement officials, to attempt to cover up these murders as they covered up at first Daniel's murder. And so I'm so glad that you are a mother who is standing up for the right to life that Daniel had and that many people in incarceration still have, but their rights to life are being threatened also. I feel that a lot of this is happening because mentally ill people and people who have dependencies on drugs and alcohol are being used as prison profiteering commodities. There are insufficient beds in mental hospitals, and that is one thing that we're fighting when we stand up for H.R. 3717, which is a congressional bill that's pending right now before the U.S. Congress. And it was introduced by a Representative Timothy Murphy, who was a practicing psychologist before he became an elected official. He's a representative out of the state of Pennsylvania, and he has before Congress right now the Helping Families with Mental Health Crisis Act. If that bill is passed, we will have an increase of beds at mental hospitals because Medicaid insurance will be resumed for certain facilities. We'd also have AOT programs, that's Assisted Outpatient Treatment Programs, that offer great services, mandated psychiatric treatment, and subsistence assistance for people who need it. Also, the bill provides for relaxation of the HIPAA rules so that families can know about their loved one's mental health condition and can also get the information that they need in order to be better advocates for the people they love. And it, moreover, this is very important to your case, Valerie. H.R. 3717, the Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act, allows CIT training, that's Crisis Intervention Team training, for police officers and for prison guards, so we can remove the excuse they use so often. Whenever they kill someone with mental illness, they always say, well, the police officer lacked training in dealing with mental illness. The jail guards lack training in dealing with people with mental illness. That excuse has been used and overused. The truth is that over half the people in prisons are mentally ill. So they have training. They ignore the training that they do have very often and kill our loved ones and our friends and our neighbors who have vulnerabilities that are exploited throughout the nation. I'm going to go ahead now, Valerie, and accept some of your callers. And I'm going to start with the one who's been holding longer, and I will go down the list, and then we will come back to you. We're going to be on air until 5 p.m., so everyone will get an opportunity to speak, so don't worry. Just hang on. I'm starting with your first caller now. Good afternoon, 5405. You're on the air at Human Rights Demand. 5405 are your last four digits. Do you want to ask a question or make a comment?
Hey, Mary, it's me, Anna Santiago from New York. I'm hearing the story of this mother. My condolence goes for her because I am a mother of a lifer, too. It's shock, you know, when you hear these mothers, you know, talking about their loved one behind bars, and we feel hopeless. And I understand this mom complete. And we're all here to support her so we could fight what she needs to fight. And as a mother, I'm going to stand by whatever decision you need to make. And you know, Mary, you got my, I got your back here in New York, whatever you need, because you know I'm a mom.
Well, thank God for you, Anna. I think that thank mothers you. And fathers and brothers mm-hmm. and sisters and advocates throughout the nation need to come forward and stand up for one another. You know, there is too much fear in America. We need to stand up against the prison industrial complex that chooses to victimize our loved ones. There are many people who are incarcerated. Some of them are guilty as charged. But it doesn't matter whether a person is innocent or guilty. They have no right to give a death sentence to people who were not given a death sentence by the court. As a matter of fact, I don't think the court has the right to issue death sentences, period. But certainly people like Daniel, who only did a misdemeanor, if that, should not be murdered behind bars. Your next caller is 7735. 7735, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Mary?
I am doing well. This is Leona Brando, who is the director of New Vision Organization. That's a prisoner activist organization. And I will let Leona Brando speak to you now.
Okay. You know, I'm listening to this mother, and I'm really frustrated. I mean, this is beyond comprehension that anybody in this country, any government, can allow these kind of things to happen. And I feel for the mother, and I, as you said, Mary, you broke down and cried because you went through it with your own brother, you know, who died unnecessarily, and he wasn't even guilty of anything. But to have this happen to even a teenager, to have it happen to anyone is bad enough. But I'm listening to it, and I'm really getting sick to my stomach just thinking about how these things are going on. And I had seen something on Facebook that was written by John F. Kennedy. And me, coming from Cape Cod, living 6 miles from the Kennedy compound, I remember the Kennedys very well. And this man, six days before he was assassinated, he was saying that he had planned on exposing this country, this government, exposing the whole concept of incarcerating, enslaving all men, women, and children. And this goes back to the days of the Hitler's time, you know, and the mass murders. This is happening too much. I just wanted to say real quickly that right now, Valerie, if you can, sometime give me a call. My number is 508-533-7735. We have a couple of attorneys, and we also have a vice president who is planning on actually, they've connected with Dr. Wood and Dr. Russell and some others throughout the country, and they're going to be doing some kind of a press conference on all of these deaths and all of these abuses. So if you can give me a call sometime, and perhaps we'd like to include you in this so that you can speak out. So your son's death is not going to be in vain, okay? Sometimes they say sometimes good things come out of bad things. And I just want your brother, as well as Mary. And Mary, I was doing something this morning about you because you're an icon in this country and pretty much globally now. You have been such an advocate and an activist for the abused and for the mentally ill. And if there were more advocates like yourself, we would be in good shape. But we cannot continue to allow this thing, these abuses, these deaths, these things to be happening. I don't care what color, what race, what religion, what culture. It shouldn't be happening to anybody. And I just want to say I admire you, Mary, for all that you have done to bring these issues to the forefront. And Valerie, you're a strong woman. Your son would be very proud of you because to go through something like that, I know it's taken everything out of you. But again, we want you to use that as a means to keep your son's name alive, as Mary has done with her brother Larry. And that's all I want to say. Give me a call or even go on the website, New Vision Organization, Inc., and get the information on there. Get in contact with us so I can connect you with our attorney, Anka Jane from New York, and our president, William Grisby. You and the others that are going to be going before the press conference will definitely be getting the word out to put a stop to this so that others are not going to have to go through what either one of you have gone through. That's all I have to say, Mary, and I thank you for allowing me to say that.
We really appreciate you, Leona Brando. Leona Brando was a social worker, and for years she worked with families that are in negative circumstances. And then she found herself in the same situation as Ms. Anna, who called first. Who our first guest speaker who gave comments regarding Daniel Listenbigler's murder. Her son is a lifer, and she became a prisoner activist, and what a prisoner activist she is. Please look online for newvisionorganization.inc, New Vision Organization, Inc., NBO. Leona Brando has a radio show here at Human Rights Demand Channel every Monday at 3 p.m. And she brings guests who are either former prisoners or people with expert knowledge regarding prisoners' rights. So please join us on Mondays at 3 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time for the MBO Hour. I want to go on to our next caller. We have a caller who's been waiting 23 minutes and listening to the show, and I'm going to put 3066 online right now. Hello, 3066.
Hi, Mary. How are you? My name's Holly.
Hello,
and
Holly Austin. This is Holly Austin. Her son is one of the people that assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill is advocating for. Her son's name is Terrell Scott. Please look up the first article I wrote about Terrell Scott to get an overview of his situation. He was a teenage sex slave. So look up Terrell, T-E-R-R-E-L-L, Scott, S-C-O-T-T. He was a teenage sex slave. Go ahead, Ms. Austin.
Hi, Valerie. I know saying my condolences won't even cover what the hurt, the sadness, the despair that you're going through with the loss of your son. I don't even know where to begin. It pisses me off that this has happened to your child, and how here in America this is going on. But in my opinion, they don't care. I know there's advocates that say they're going to do things, and I really, really hope whoever's listening, if they're sick and tired of what's happening to the mentally ill, people who are on drugs, whatever, the thing is, if you are poor and you don't have money, you are screwed here in America. I am so sick and I'm so tired of hearing people saying they're going to do something. Now, here's a mother that her son was killed in prison and other people. When I saw my son last night, I told him I was going to go on the radio show, and what they did to your son, he is aware. They do it in Northampton County Prison. They put the spit rags, they put all those things on. So this isn't, they cover up a lot of stuff, but this is what's going on in these prisons. And and I don't want to sound selfish. I hope that this does not happen to my son, that he will be killed in prison. He was already almost killed in prison. He was on life support. But this isn't really about me. This story is about what has happened to your son. I am so sorry. And I really hope the advocates, whoever is listening, people who have money, officials, lawyers, judges, these prisons are so corrupt. It's about money. And they don't care about the poor. They don't care about the sick. Okay? And karma, excuse my language, is a bitch. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound so angry, but I just have so much rage and hurt, and I'm so sorry that this has happened to your child.
Thank you, Ms. Holly Austin. And we want to hear an update during this show about your son, Terrell Scott, who was arrested supposedly for violating probation when two of the appointments for probation were set for days before he was ever released from prison. Can you imagine someone being held for violating probation when two of the days that he supposedly violated probation, he had never been released from prison in Pennsylvania. And the third day that he supposedly violated probation is an appointment they set for him while they knew he was already an inpatient in a mental hospital. He was removed from the mental hospital and imprisoned instead, saying that he violated probation by seeking help for his PTSD, which he got by spending 4.5 years in a Pennsylvania prison without trial. His right to trial was denied, and that's Terrell Scott. I ask you to please look online. My name is Mary Neal, N-E-A-L, and I keep everyone updated on the atrocious behavior, absolutely atrocious, by the state of Pennsylvania regarding Terrell Scott. And Holly, please don't give up hope. We believe in God, and we know that God loves justice. We have another caller at 4257. 4257.
Hello, Mary. This is Dr. William Grigsby, Vice President for New Vision Organization. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello, Valerie?
Yes, I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Valerie, you're online right
yes,
now.
Yes, I'm
go
here.
And talk to your guest, please.
Hello.
Hello, Valerie. I just want to send out my condolences, and I want to echo, again, what our founder and president, Leona, said earlier. I just want to let you know that the entire New Vision organization, all of us 70 volunteers, we are here. We are a virtual network, but we are nationwide, and we will be supporting you. If you just give us a call, we'll set up a case for you. But I just want to let you know that we are here to support you as well.
Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that, and I definitely will call you. I've got your number, and I will call you today. Hello? I'm still here.
Valerie?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, audience. I was just on the phone with Mr. Burgess. He's a gentleman that I was introduced to by Ms. Valerie Lissenbigler. He's someone who also lost a son in the Florida. And the death of his son, as I understand it, was successfully covered up. It was covered up until now. And so we're going to try to bring Mr. Burgess on the phone with you right now and see if he can tell you about it. Let me see. I have another caller. Let's see. That seems to have been waiting. Hello, this is 5405 on the air. Is this Anna? Anna?
Yeah, I'm here.
5405. This is Anna.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. All right, then. I'm looking for Mr. Burgess. And when we find him on the line, we will let him speak about his covered up murder. Mr. Burgess, thank you so much, Mary. Yes. Mr. Burgess, are you on the line now? We have quite a bit of cyber stalking because you see, when you talk about prison issues. When you talk about prison issues, you're not only talking about, you know, the local jails, the local prisons. This is the United States Department of Justice. Their job is to protect the rights of institutionalized people because every police department, every prison, every jail operates under the United States Department of Justice. The United States Department of Justice brings together all of your agencies, the CIA, the FBI, all of that. Now, NSA, the spying organization and the cyber-stalking organization, that's under the Department of War. Now, lots of people don't know, but NDAA, which is the National,
whatever it is. I'm going to look for those conditions. I always tell them to the AA. But if not only for that, for war with other countries, but it provides for Americans to be housed in concentration camps, and that's been a great point of contention for most people. And it also provides for a cyber war. This cyber war can be carried out for people in other countries, but also it's something that I find is carried out against Americans who are operating in our freedom of press rights. So we're looking for Mr. Burgess to call, and hopefully he will be allowed to get through. I want to ask Ms. Valerie, has she encountered, besides that initial point when authorities were lying about how her son died, have you encountered any cyber-stalking activities, any funny business with your phone or your computers to let you know that you have been targeted for surveillance since you were seeking justice? Has that happened to you yet?
Yes, but a little bit with my phone. I don't do any social networking. Even if I could, I don't do it. I'm old school. But here recently I got a DUI, and I just happened to have a off-duty deputy that was following me, and they were more interested in who was Daniel, because I have it written on my car, Clay County Homicide, Justice for Daniel, policeabuse.com. And I got arrested for a DUI, and I got treatment like Paris Hilton when I got to the jail, and they got me out of there pretty quick. But it was just odd that an off-duty deputy, which I believe is not a deputy, I believe she's a detective, in Martin County, so she followed me over Martin County line. But nevertheless, I'm not going to stop fighting for my son. I'm going to continue to fight for him. I'm his biggest advocate, and I know he would have done it for me because I, too, am familiar with Department of Corrections. The only thing that's consistent inside those walls is inconsistency. I have stories to tell that would floor you. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because I know that if it would have happened to me, my son Daniel, my best friend, would be fighting for me right now. And I'm never going to let it go. If you go on YouTube, you can get a taste of these sadistic sociopaths. You go on YouTube and you put on their Clay County Homicide, you'll get 3 hours and 41 minutes of their testimonies. Their accounts of the stories that they have to tell, and they sound like sadistic sociopaths. And it's a hard pill to swallow every day, but just know I'm not going anywhere unless the good Lord comes and gets me. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I certainly understand your sentiments about that. And we all are here to support you and congratulate you on taking a strong stance against the injustice which your son died by. And we want to thank God that you have attorneys who are representing you in litigation against Clay County Jail right now. And we pray that God gives them good success regarding your lawsuit in this wrongful death matter. We want to thank God for quickly pulling the cover off Daniel Listenberger's death. Listen, Bigler, I'm sorry, it's a lot of syllables for me, but I thank God for pulling the shroud of cover-up off his murder so quickly. My own brother, Larry Neal, was a free man. He was a man with a long history of severe mental illness. He had been hospitalized for mental illness for roughly 20 years. Before individuals such as him were released from mental hospitals. Actually, I use the term evicted. They were evicted from the nation's mental hospitals when Medicaid was withdrawn from psychiatric inpatients. Many of them were not as blessed as Larry was. They did not have a large family to look after them. and many of them died on our streets of starvation. Many of them froze to death. This happened during the 1970s. And during the 70s and 80s, America had an absolutely humongous homeless population. And many of these people, if not most of them, were persons who had been released from mental hospitals. The reason I feel it was done was so that those same people could be not deinstitutionalized, but trans-institutionalized into the nation's jails and prisons. And when the prison population in America swole to the point that there was overcrowding every place, they created a problem, and then they resolved it by instituting private prisons and jails. So it was through deinstitutionalizing mentally ill people in America that this tremendous industry grew up called private prisons and jails. Today, private prisons and jails and even our public facilities have 1.25 million mentally ill people therein. So the mentally ill are still the backbone of America's prison system, where 2.3 to 2.5 million people are incarcerated right now. Over half of them have mental health conditions. Over 60% of the people in solitary confinement are mentally ill people. Furthermore, on our streets, over 50% of the victims of police violence are mentally ill people. So you can see that we don't really have overcrowded jails and prisons from any normal reason. We have them because we stopped treating mental illness as a health condition in order to misuse that population as prisoners. They're being misused as prisoners because of the great amount of money that CCA and other private prison companies earn. And many, many of our big American companies are taking advantage of the prison population when they use prison laborers instead of hiring free people. Right now, there's a push on from the White House and others to upgrade minimum wage in America to $11 an hour. But I say to you that there should also be a push on by Washington to eliminate prison profiteering. If the industries that are used to free labor, in Georgia, prisoners get zero wages an hour. If we eliminate the possibility of getting free and cheap slave labor from prisoners, then we would go a long way toward fighting this mass incarceration. They should have to pay all workers in America minimum wage, whatever minimum wage is. The minimum wage that prisoners earned could go to A, pay for their incarceration, B, pay their victims if there are any victims. A lot of the crimes that people are incarcerated for don't have to do with finances, but many of them do. So pay restitution to victims. And C, they should pay their child support. These big industries are incarcerating people and working them for free when their children are left for taxpayers to support. If the industries had to pay minimum wage, then the prisoners would have money to support their own children and get that burden off the taxpayer. And then the last thing that their money should go for, after paying something for their own incarceration, after paying back their victims, if there are any, and after paying their child support, the last thing their money should go to is to their reentry fund. Prisoners are released penniless. In Georgia, they're released for just $25. That's $10 of their own money and $15 from the state. probably interest from their own money. Some of them have been working for 20 years behind bars, and their release was only $25. $25 won't even pay for their meals for a week. So they're set up to return to prison because they're set up to recidivate. They're set up to, again, do something considered wrong and be rearrested. Because $25 will not feed a person for a week. So we need to stop slavery in America, and it needs to begin with making all these big companies, Microsoft, Boeing Airlines, the U.S. government, all of them need to pay minimum wage for prisoner labor, and that way there will be no escape to minimum wage. And the money can go to the prisoners' families, to their victims, to their own incarceration, and also to a reentry fund so that prisoners will have a way to start their new life when they leave behind prison bars. So I just want to put that in there, and I want to check again to see if Mr. Burgess managed to come online. Mr. Burgess, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So you're calling. What are your last four digits?
For 8072.
Okay. We so much appreciate your calling in today. This is Human Rights Demand. That's the name of this channel, Human Rights Demand. You know, Frederick Douglass was an abolitionist of the 1800s, and he said that power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. And so we believe that here at Blog Talk Radio Human Rights Demand Channel, and so we're making a demand today for human rights for prisoners. And I believe you called because you want to join us in making that demand. Is that right, Mr. Burgess?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, go right ahead and tell us. I talked to Ms. Valerie, and she asked me to call you because she said that your son was also murdered in a Florida correctional facility. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, tell us about that, please. I understand it's been a cover-up.
Yes. Well, both myself and my younger brother. My younger brother served 25 years in the Navy as a law enforcement officer, and I also was a law enforcement officer here in Arizona, and I was in corrections also. I dealt with a lot of prisoners, been to school for corrections officers training, and, that's a lot of my background for that area. My son was incarcerated because he had so-called was a lookout for a burglary that was in progress, and they implicated him in it, and he was the only one who paid back all his restitution and complied with it, and he got down to like his last 2.5 months of probation. And he would have been adjudicated of the crime if he had completed it. But because of a egotistical probation officer, found a way to violate him. And I had gone to the attorney about it, and there was nothing we could do because once they violate you, they violate you, and the judges won't sway on what they have to say. So anyways, he had gone back into the jail, been incarcerated back into the jail again to finish off his last 3 months of probation, and he was having a hard time in there, and they had put him in segregation. So segregation, they told me they put him in it because he had said he had blood or something, and they felt that he needed to be incarcerated separately from the rest of the prison population, and that's where he stayed for almost a month and a half. While he was in there, I'd visit him a couple times. Very difficult to get in to visit. They had some really stupid rules down there. I couldn't understand why until finally I found out why, because they don't have enough officers working the jail. and they didn't want to hire any more officers to work the jail, so they were working officers 10-hour shifts, and most times there wasn't more than six officers for this whole jail, which at any one time was housing anywhere from 200 to 300-something prisoners. Anyways, we get a call from a chaplain comes out from the jail and advises me that my son was in the hospital, that it was a suicide, so we had gone up to the hospital and they had him on life support, and they came in and told us that he had tried to hang himself. Well, anybody knows, it's been in the business, corrections, you don't give prisoners who are in confinement or on suspected suicide bed sheets. I mean, everybody knows you can tear a bed sheet and hang yourself with it. And apparently that's what they tried to tell us. But they would not release any photographs or any pictures to us or to my attorney, about this. I got the whole file here on everything. And he had, from what I understand, there was no black and blue marks at all around his neck when I had gotten to the hospital, which was only about 45 minutes after the whole incident had happened. And apparently he had stayed in his cell for almost an hour before any corrections officer found him. And I know why, because they don't have enough officers to watch him. And anybody who's in segregated cell or on suicide watch is supposed to be checked every 15 minutes. That's what I was taught. My brother was taught the same thing. We all knew what was supposed to be done. And apparently these people, violate these rules quite often. But anyways, we found some other things go around, and we found another prisoner there that was an illegal alien that was being held illegally, and he was being passed around to different county jails in there, and he had been incarcerated for almost 2 years. And my brother had talked to him at several incidences and visited him in other correctional, because he had moved him out of Clay County Jail at the time to another facility, and my brother had gone there and interviewed him and found out that they had apparently abused my son a couple of times, stuck him in the chair, tied him down in a chair, and maced him with a bag over his head. And this was common practice in that jail, even though they deny it. I've talked to some other inmates that have been there, and they had similar reports of this abuse that continues to go on. It's quite common, abuse that they have. When I had a chance to see my son's body, the only black and blue marks I seen was like somebody had put straps around his ankles, and this is according to what they do when they put you in a chair. They would tie your legs down with plastic straps and your arms and legs so you couldn't move, and they would put the bag over your head and spray you, which anybody knows, if you put a wet sack or a bag over somebody's head and you spray it, it cuts down the oxygen flow and can suffocate you very easily. And some people can handle a little bit longer than others, but most times you're going to suffocate somebody by doing that. The military used it years ago to interrogate prisoners of war, to get information about them. They used the same type of treatment, put a sack overhead, wet it, you start to suffocate, and you start yelling, yeah, I'll talk. Well, apparently somebody at those jails like to do that. And this is what we've concluded. That's probably what happened to him, and they just stuck him back in a cell and manipulated it that it looked like it was a suicide. And according to this other gentleman, he concurred some of the things that my brother and I had found out that had happened to my son. And then I see the same thing, here it is almost 10 years later, happening to Valerie Lingenfelder's son, the same incident. And the kid was in there on misdemeanor charges. So what? He's kicking on a door. I read the police report that was published by the news media down in Jacksonville, Florida, and it was the biggest bunch of hogwash cover-up I've ever seen in my whole life. And that goes to Florida law enforcement, who's supposed to be doing the investigation. Why do you call up a suspected witness or something and call him on the phone, interview him on the phone? When a major investigation, you can't get in a car and drive to his house because he was off duty? I mean, these are some of the loopholes and stuff that they have in this whole darn investigation. You can see it's a cover-up. I mean, they kill people down there and they cover it up. And they've got a organization there, a sheriff's organization that's supposed to do lots of things. And I found out from another person down there that worked for the sheriff's department that was higher up in the Jacksonville, Duval County Sheriff's Department, that told me it's the biggest joke going because they cover each other's butt. And it's a major organization that they have down there that, call it, I don't know, sheriff something or other, but they're supposed to back each other up for investigations, and they're in it with Florida law enforcement because Florida law enforcement pumps a lot of money into these sheriff's offices, for drug enforcement, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a shame. It's a shame. I've seen inmates being abused by corrections officers. I was a jail chaplain for over a year down there, and I had seen young men trying to come to chapel, and because they laughed in line, the correction officer wanted to take discipline action on them right away. I mean, come on. A school child knows better than that. You know, teachers put up with it all the time. Kids are going to fool around. Inmates, especially younger inmates, are going to do the same thing. They're incarcerated. They got nothing else to do with themselves. You know, so they're going to fool around and you know, push and shove and just like little children. But you understand that. If you're a corrections officer, you let it go. I mean, that's the way they are. Just some, hey, settle down, knock it off. And we'll do it, but to go to extremes, to threaten these guys with the chair, as they call it, they know what's coming up. But this is ridiculous, this whole system. And I don't think it's just centered in Clay County, Florida, but I see it other places throughout the United States. But it's predominantly cruel treatment still left over in a lot of the southern states yet. Not only minorities get it, but, you know, the white folks get it too, just as bad, if not, sometimes not worse, depending upon the correction staff that's overseeing them. But this here cruelty stuff is getting way, way, way out of hand, you know. And like the your host here had saying about privatization of prisons. Right here in my town, right here, we've got a private prison. And it houses lots of inmates. And a lot of people I know work out there. But it's a money-making deal. You figure most of these states are paying $35,000 per prisoner per year to house them. And that includes medical costs, dental, et cetera. And we, the taxpayers, are paying this burden for it. The latest thing for these politicians to escape from, especially the sheriffs, is now they're charging here. I know they're charging here for your incarceration in the jail. Well, you get the fine, and then you get the incarceration fees, and these people are turned loose with no jobs. So they're back on the street for maybe 30 to 90 days, and next thing you know it, they're getting arrested because they got a warrant out for them now because they haven't paid any of these fees. Well, when you get stuck with a $3,000 fee, which I know a lady here that happened to. She can't pay it. She has no job. She's got no income coming in. She can't get a job. So they just keep cycling her through and adding to her bill. It's ridiculous. A friend of mine just recently.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Can I break in, Mr. Burgess?
Sure.
You're right. It's absolutely ridiculous how when we consider man's inhumanity to man. What you're describing is a slave system. It grew up in the prison industrial complex right after the end of slavery. What more Caucasian Americans have begun to recognize now is that this slavery system it doesn't really care what your race is. It doesn't really care what your religion is. It doesn't care that you are fellow Americans. This slave system cares about money, and that's all. But I want to encourage you, sir. I have some good news for you, Mr. Burgess. And if you look in my blog that's called Legal Victories, it's about a police murder cover-up that was settled for $1.7 million. It was a police murder cover-up, and the big name was Jerry Amaro, A-M-A-R-O. It was Jerry Amaro III. Now, the Oakland Police Department first lied to Mr. Amaro's sister and mother and falsely claimed that they had found him dead in an empty apartment. So this is the lie. You know, they always try to cover up their murders. Any murderer will try to cover up his murders, and police officers are no different. They try to cover up their murders, too. So because they initially lied regarding how Jerry Amaro died, his family was late filing their wrongful death lawsuit because of the cover-up. And it was decided. It was already decided. You have precedent on this. The 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco concluded that a homicide sergeant had withheld critical facts that could have substantiated the family's belief that Amaro died of injuries sustained during his police beating. And because they hid the murder, the family's statute of limitations was lengthened, and they could go right ahead with their wrongful death lawsuit, even though it was time past for filing that lawsuit. So I want you to be encouraged by that. That's in Legal Victories blog. The name of the article is Murder Cover-Up, the Police Murder Cover-Up Settled for $1.7 million. And you look at that, put Legal Victories in your computer browser, and you could put Legal Victories Mary Neal, because whenever I name one of my blogs, the cover-up team comes behind me, and they name a lot of things, the same thing as mine, so you'll have trouble finding it. So put Legal Victories Mary Neal, N-E-A-L, and read about this police cover-up where the family was allowed to file their wrongful death lawsuit and get a settlement even though it was past time to file their wrongful death action. Did you understand that, Mr. Burgess?
Yes, ma'am. We had attorneys down there, and his attorney that I had for him for the case went to another legal firm that was in Jacksonville, Florida, and they played with that thing for about 2 or 3 months, and then they finally just, like, backed out of the whole thing. I never got an answer why, but I imagine it was political, because they kind of like...
What was the law firm called?
Pardon me?
What was the name of the law firm that backed up?
Oh, I can't think of the name of it right offhand right now. I'd have to go look in the files, but it was in the Blackburn building in Jacksonville, Florida. It was quite a large firm, I understand, that handled a lot of those cases. But they said that their investigator couldn't find out much. And then I found out later on that their investigator was an ex-cop. So, you know where that went.
There are many conspiracies to deny justice to families after wrongful death. I think that the conspiracy to cover up the wrongful death of my brother, Larry Neal, is probably the most elaborate conspiracy in the United States of America since the death of John F. Kennedy. You know, you think
that... Oh, yeah,
that
was a cover-up and a half on that one.
Absolutely. Absolutely, sir. You would think that cover-ups are only for rich people or famous people or politicians, but my brother was a mentally ill, disabled man. He had a heart condition, too, and he was secretly arrested. That's a kidnapping. In Memphis Shelby County Jail in Tennessee, they kept him 18 days while we looked for him as a missing person. They lied continually and denied having him in custody. They killed him on the 18th day. They have never disclosed how they killed him. They never disclosed why he was even arrested. And we are persecuted, censored, cyber-stalked every time we ask, why did you kill Larry Neal? Why did you secretly arrest Larry Neal? How did he die? They will not answer any of those questions. They will not answer our Freedom of Information Act requests. They will not even answer federal subpoenas. Now, the Jenny Cochran firm were our fraudulent attorneys. They took the case of the wrongful death of Larry Neal the same day he died, and we signed contracts the day after his funeral. And these people sat on that case and did zero for the statute of limitations in Tennessee. They had us believing that we had a wrongful death lawsuit underway against the jail, Shelby County Jail. They had us believing that we had a negligence lawsuit underway against the state of Tennessee, where Larry Neal was a ward of the state after 20 years in a mental institution. We thought that we had a negligence lawsuit going against his final care home, which was responsible to see that he got mental health treatment if he was in a crisis. So we had three lawsuits going according to our frame of reference, when in fact the Cochran firm had not filed a single case. They hadn't done discovery. Our file was empty with them. They were defrauding us to protect the jail and possibly to protect the United States Department of Justice that was in overview of the jail at the time. You know, oftentimes when these things happen in a city or county or a municipality, when these murders happen in our correctional facilities or even hospitals like the VA, we ask the federal government to do federal investigations. If the government conducts an investigation and finds the facility to be abusive to its inmates or abusive to its patients, then they will supposedly put that institution under direct overview of the United States Department of Justice. This is the same United States Department of Justice that secretly tortured people in Guantanamo Bay. This is the same Justice Department that... has the FBI that is in overview of the CIA, which violate all of our rights with its cyber stalking, with its monitoring. This is the same Justice Department that was in overview of Shelby County Jail. And this Justice Department has given us no cooperation whatsoever regarding release of information about my brother's secret arrest, that's a kidnapping and murder in a facility that the Justice Department was already in overview of. So I say to you, when you get federal investigations and when the feds take over an abusive jail or hospital or prison, you don't necessarily find anything positive happening. That is why all of these murders, all of these brutality cases, all of these police departments continually kill people, innocent people, unarmed people, because the Justice Department itself is criminal. What do you think about that, Ms. Valerie?
Well, what I'd like to say, first of all, is, Mr. Burgess, tell them where your son was killed.
Clay County
what
jail.
Jail?
Clay
what
County.
Jail? Clay County,
Clay
Florida.
County.
Same jail as my son, right?
Right. And there was a man killed right after that, too, Valerie.
Yeah, I know. You told me. Another thing I'd like to do in my son's name is I'm going to let society know just where their taxpaying money goes. This federal lawsuit that my family and I have had to file, the taxpayers of Clay County, St. John's, and Duval, you're paying for this federal lawsuit. I wanted you to know that. And then I also wanted to read something, if it's okay. It's called Cut the Malarkey. It's called Clay County, Florida Deputies Get Away with Murder, posted on August 26, 2013. I can't see this one, so read it. My daughter's going to read it. I'm fine. This was made by a religious group. Speak clearly.
All right, go ahead and read.
It says, Clay County, Florida deputies get away with murder. It's official. Angela B. Corey, state's attorney, put her seal of approval on it. In March of this year, a 19-year-old white man named Daniel Entenbigler was murdered by Clay County, Florida Sheriff's Jail deputies. From what the article says, Mr. Entenbigler was mentally ill and could not control himself. Deputies locked him in a padded room, but that's not enough anymore. All law enforcement are power-tripping control freaks with a submit-and-obey mentality. Whatever Mr. Entenbigler was doing in the soundproof room pissed off at least some of the deputies. Well, deputies and jailers across the U.S. have torture devices they call a restraint chair. It is a wheelchair with shackles and straps. There are no limitations on how hard the straps can be pulled. Clay County, Florida Sheriff's Jail deputies pulled the straps on Mr. Entenbigler so tight across his chest, head and neck that he suffocated to death. They also pepper sprayed Mr. Entenbigler several times and pepper sprayed a diaper and secured that around his eyes, mouth, and nose. I've never read of a use of a restraint chair that didn't also involve the use of pepper spray and or punches to the face of the restrained victim. The deputies got away with murder. While the medical examiner ruled Daniel Entenbigler's death a homicide, the state's attorney office called it accidental, saying there was no criminal wrongdoing on the part of the deputies. Imagine the last hours of Daniel Entenbigler's life, if you dare. Please do put him and his loved ones on your prayer list. Clay County, Florida, is part of the Jacksonville greater area. If you don't have a reason to go there, then please don't. If you're convention or vacation are scheduled there, then please choose somewhere else. Don't build a business there. Don't bring jobs or any form of tax revenues to Clay County, Florida. The state's attorney for the district is Angela B. Corey. I'm sorry I don't have the names of the criminal deputies. Angela B. Corey doesn't deserve the dignity of living a long, happy life. Neither do any of the cowardly, murderous Clay County Sheriff's Office employees who killed an innocent man. Please join me in praying to God that he will strike them down. In the meantime, write, call, or fax to send your concern, contempt, or hate to the guilty below. Oh, one more thing. Oh, never mind. That was something else they had put on there. What do you think about that?
Good
Hello?
Writing.
Yes.
Good writing. I was glad to see that she mentioned Angela Corey. Angela
yes.
Corey is a corrupt prosecutor in Florida who is prosecuting Marissa Alexander, wants her to get 60 years at taxpayers' expense in prison for firing a warning shot when her husband had threatened to beat her right after she was out of the hospital having a new baby. You know that a woman's body, when she has a new baby, is very vulnerable. This young woman had been beaten by her ex-husband so badly before that she had been hospitalized. But Angela Corey wants her in jail for trying to scare her ex-husband so that he wouldn't beat her after she had just had a new baby when her body was at its most vulnerable state. Angela Corey needs a taste of her own medicine. She needs to be arrested for crimes against humanity. This woman deserves our support. Vanessa Valerie deserves our support. Colleen Austin, the mother of Terrell Scott, deserves our support. NVO, New Vision Organization, an organization of activists who stand up for prisoners' rights, deserves our support. Mr. Burgess deserves our support in the wrongful death of his son that is so far unrequited. I deserve your support regarding the secret arrest and cold-blooded murder of my brother, Larry Neal, and I ask you to look online for wrongful death of Larry Neal. Also, Miss Anna, who you heard speak first as the caller on this show to support Miss Valerie. She deserves support. Her son is in prison for life, and prisoners deserve their human and civil rights to be protected. And that's why we're here today, to make a human rights demand on behalf of everyone who's incarcerated and on behalf of everyone who is threatened with a greater risk of incarceration because they are mentally ill. We don't believe in throwaway people. We believe that everybody deserves their human and civil rights, regardless of their health condition. It doesn't matter if they are strung out on drugs or alcohol. It doesn't matter if they are schizophrenic, bipolar, suffer from PTSD, or any other ailment, autism. They deserve their human rights to be respected. Human rights demand that sick people should be hospitalized and not incarcerated. But I want to offer you to listen again from a mother whose son was in a mental hospital for his condition, and he was arrested at the mental hospital and taken to jail because he's mentally ill. What kind of sense does that make? Ms. Holly Austin, would you speak to us about that?
Yes, I just wanted to give everybody an update, and I'm going to throw some names out there. Judge Zito. Judge Zito is the... It's a judge that has been sitting on my son's case now for 5 years because he was arrested July 1st, 2009. So that's Judge Zito's one. And Judge Zito's well aware of my son's mental illness. And on Judge Zito's watch, my son tried to kill himself because of the treatment that they've done to him in Northampton County Prison. Officer Hill, now Terrell was on, I'm still tired right now, but basically, you know, the prisoners, you know, they're segregated from the other prisoners. So they allowed Terrell to be held down. And I'm going to throw out names, but I don't care at this point. Christopher Ayla was able to get a wooden dustpan brush, okay, and hit my son repeatedly over the head. This was the first year in of his incarceration, the day after Christmas, December 6, 2009. From that beating, my son lost his eyesight in his left eye, his hearing in his right ear, and my son's jaw is broken, okay? No medical treatment. Nothing was done. They just ignored it. My son was housed with, can't think of the guy's name, who had HIV. He had a medically inserted catheter bag. My son had to clean up his bloody urine that was on the floor with nothing was, they didn't give him gloves or anything like that. My son has been filling a hole, I don't know how many times, okay? The attorney that took my dad's money, Attorney Lauer, did nothing to help my son, okay? He even had it so, without telling my son, sign his rights away to a speedy trial, okay? This is all based on a lie from an older woman, okay, who one of her children died under her care. Now, two of her daughters are of age. Now, if they have any ounce of being sorry or anything like that, I wish they would step forward because my son on his last leg right now. What Judge Zito is saying, because Christopher Davis, they're saying because of Terrell, as they call it, of trying to kill himself, because since they let him out, because of everything that Mary has been doing, they let him out, but now Christopher Davis went and got a fake arrest warrant, sorry, the other guy was already on the air, That's what they do, and the judges, they don't care. So their arrest warrant said that my son did not make it to the Christian department meeting, and that Lehigh County unsuccessfully...
Excuse me, Holly,
yes.
Please. Excuse me. I noticed that COINTELPRO is putting little soundless bites in your message. I want to make sure that everyone understands that Holly Alston's son, Terrell Scott, his whole story is in Dog Justice for Mentally Ill blog. Put in your browser Dog Justice, D-O-G, for Mentally Ill blog, and read about Terrell Scott. She's saying that a lie was told to get a warrant saying that Terrell Scott had missed probation appearances when that was totally inconsistent with the truth and inconsistent with the record. And she's saying that he's been brutalized in prison, that his lawyer, Mr. Lauer, L-A-U-E-R, or is it R-E-R?
L-A-U-E-R.
Please don't go to him. Mr. Lauer. He tricked a mentally ill person into signing away his right to a speedy trial. Meanwhile, Terrell Scott sat in prison 4.5 years waiting on the opportunity to defend himself against false charges that were levied by a woman he was living with. He was living with a woman named Crystal. What is her last name, Holly?
Hodgins.
Spell it.
H-O-D-G-K-I-N-S.
He was living with this woman named Crystal Hodgins, who had already lost a child under suspicious circumstances. Terrell Scott, when he knew he couldn't live with this woman anymore, he didn't want to be with her anymore, he felt bad about leaving and leaving her other children in her care, because this woman would get paid her child support and disappear for days and sometimes weeks at a time. And they had no one to look up to, no one to take care of them, but a mentally ill young man that she brought into her house to use as a sex slave when Terrell Scott was only 17 and she was near 50. So Terrell Scott felt bad about leaving the children in her care, so he first went to child care services and told them about the children's abuse and negligence. And this allegation was investigated and found to be true, absolutely true. And the state removed her 5 minor children from her custody. Months later, she missed her child support. And so she decided to go to the police and lie on Terrell Scott and say that he had molested her children. Months later, Terrell Scott, after he had saved these children by reporting this woman, this abusive mother, to Child Care Protective Services, he himself got arrested on only her word that he had molested her children. He was waiting for his day in court for months. Months turned into years, and years turned into 4.5 years of absolute torture for Terrell Scott. And they never once gave him a trial, because they knew that if they gave him a trial, they would have to let him go, because there was only the word of an abusive, negligent mother against Terrell Scott, who had never had any trouble with police in his whole life. He was an upstanding, decent, and gentle person. Although he had mental illness, he was never violent. And they lied on him and refused to give him a trial. His attorney was a part of the railroading. And then when they did let him out, after he signed a release, he signed a plea bargain. That's the only way he was ever going to get out of jail, because they never planned to give him a trial and expose what they had done to him. So they let him sign a plea bargain, and even that they have not honored. Because
Can I interrupt real quick, Mary? I'm sorry. I just want the listening audience to know, even though he signed, it was a no surrender. I'm not pronouncing that right. The thing is, they never did a pre-sentencing report. So if anybody has their first offense, that is required by law to do that. The judge never bothered to ask any questions that if you understood what he was standing before the judge, that, you know, by doing this, you're saying you're guilty, whatever, okay? No questions were that asked. The only question that Judge Zito asked my son, are you taking your medication? That was it. And during that hearing, I repeatedly kept standing up and trying to say that, to tell Trell what his rights were. And they pulled Trell out of there. But I just wanted to solicit the audience to know now, what they're doing in Northampton County prison or Northampton County out here, if you are mentally ill, they are sentencing you to state prison. That's it. My son has a hearing on August 5th. He gave this new attorney that they appointed him. They said you need to find a program that would take Trell with all of these charges, and they added extra 40 charges while my son has been back in prison. So now they added 40 charges. So there's no place that's going to take my son. First of all, there's hardly any places out here in Lehigh County or the Pennsylvania area. So now my son is saying that he cannot be in society because of his overt acts of being suicidal. So anybody out there that lives out here in Northampton County and Lehigh Valley, if you have mental illness or if you feel suicidal, they're going to send you upstate. They've already sent two other prisoners now. Now my son's next. My son told me last night, he goes, Mom, I appreciate Mary. I appreciate everybody's trying to help me, but he's done. And they know by sending him upstate that the first thing that my son's going to do is try to commit suicide. He already tried before. He was on life support. Or someone's going to kill him with all the charges. They know that. They're done with Terrell's case. They don't want to hear my mouth anymore. They don't want to hear Mary say anything else about my son. They are done. So August 5th is... they're about to send him upstate prison. So everybody, all the people that said they want to help and they care, if my sons die, it's on your head.
Amen.
I'm sorry, Mary. I'm pissed off.
You have a right to be.
Amen.
I want to thank Holly Austin for coming on board today to tell us about a young man who's threatened with prison for being suicidal. He was in a hospital. They went and got him from the hospital and want to imprison him for being suicidal. So I want to know, is there anyone who wants to speak on Holly Austin's case? All of your lines are open.
Yes, I've seen that abuse. I've been there. Fortunately, I wasn't a problematic inmate, but I've seen inmates be treated so bad and be forced to take their medicines that if they don't take it because they think it's the wrong medicine, they get a DR and they take their game time and put them in solitary confinement. And then if they take it and they fall out from it, they get a DR anyway and go to confinement because they took the wrong medicine and didn't tell the nurse. You know, it's just... there's a lot of abuse in there, and my heart goes out to her because my son Daniel was suffering from psychosis from a synthetic marijuana that they call Spice that was introduced in the United States in 97, and it was legal, and they targeted young adults, and they would not help my son. My son begged for help, and they ignored him, and they have no video to prove otherwise, and my heart just goes out to you, and I know what he's going through because I've seen it, and it's nothing nice. And my sweet Daniel's, he's not here on earth, but he's in my heart and he's in my spirit, and he's going to live through me. And I think society needs to know what's going on. They need to be educated on where their taxpaying dollars are going. And it's a different world behind them walls. You know, if you look up the definition of inmate, it says in a confined person in a confined area for change, not for death or torture or abuse, for change. Get some consistency, and somebody on the outside needs to monitor these county jails and prisons. And you know, Florida is known as the Death Belt State. I've learned so much about this. You know, the Internal Affairs, FDLE, the Sheriff's Department, they all work for each other. And I know that if I investigated my own crime, I would find myself innocent. And that's how I feel that that's what they're doing. And it's going to come out because I'm not going to stop. 110% I'm not going to stop. And now I'm fighting for something to change in my son Daniel's name and to carry his legacy and his memory on and to save other inmates. I want something so drastic to happen that when an officer sees another officer abusing an inmate, that they have fear and they run and they get help on the outside of the Sheriff's Department, Internal Affairs, and the FDLE. Because until somebody on the outside steps in, it's nationwide. It's a tragedy, and my son paid the ultimate price, and his death will not be in vain. I will not let it happen. And thank you for listening.
Well, thank you, Ms. Valerie. And as you can see, that's exactly what I feel about the secret arrest and murder of Larry Neal. His death is not in vain. Because they killed Larry Neal, all of you now have an opportunity to speak to us. All of you have this forum to talk to us about your loved ones and about the people that you advocate for. The thing is that we must stand together. We, the families of prisoners, we, the families of people with mental illness, we, the families of people who have substance abuse problems, it's up to us to put a stop to what's going on, where people are criminalized for mental illness, people are criminalized for drug and alcohol addictions, when in fact these are medical conditions that should be treated medically and not legally. Also, many inmates are in jail for illegal behavior. They are truly, rightfully in jail for murders and rapes and child abuse. They are incarcerated, but not one of them were incarcerated to be tortured, to be brutalized, to be murdered. None of them should be incarcerated for that. None of them should be treated like that. And I, for one, object to prisoner abuse, because the Bible says at Hebrews 13:3 that we should be careful how we treat prisoners. In fact, we should consider their bodies as though they were our very own. We should consider ourselves shackled with them, and we should feel their pain. And so that's what the Bible says that our stance against prisoner abuse should be. We should be as serious about stopping prisoner abuse as if it was our own body being abused. And I am that serious about it. And that is why we are all gathered here today. My name is Mary Neal, N-E-A-L. I'm Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. And we're here today to make a human rights demand on behalf of prisoners throughout the world, but especially here in America. You know, charity begins at home. I believe that love, charity, human rights, and justice should begin right here at home in America. Yet we live in a country that spends trillions of dollars to supposedly promote human rights in other countries, while people right here in America, sick people, are treated like worse than dogs. Sick people, people who are arrested only for being homeless. People are turned out of jails and prisons where they have worked for years with only $25 in their pocket. And many of these people are barred from applying for food stamps or housing or any other government programs. Yet our president last week asked Congress for $3.7 billion, with a B, to provide for illegal aliens who are flooding the country from Central America. He asked for $3.7 billion for illegal aliens, and I see nothing wrong with that if we had the money. Do we have $3.7 billion for illegal aliens when our people don't have sufficient mental hospitals? Do we have billions of dollars for illegal aliens when our people must leave jail after working for years behind bars with only $25 in their pocket and no subsistence assistance whatsoever? Do we have billions of dollars for illegal aliens while our people are denied proper health care, mental health care in their communities? I say to you that the Bible says to all of us that charity begins at home. He says that if a man will not take care of his own, especially those in his own household, he is less than an infidel. An infidel is a godless person. And indeed, it is an ungodly idea to open the borders of America to provide food, clothing, shelter, and everything else, education and health care for illegal aliens when our own citizens are deprived of those very things. I'm going to open all of your microphone lines right now. Everybody, all of your lines are open. I want you to know 5405-5309-8072-3066-4821 that your mics are open. So please keep down your background noise at this time. And I invite you to enter into a panel discussion about how we can effect positive change. You know, we were promised change, but none of us stopped and asked what kind of change. I think that the change has largely been downhill regarding human rights and civil rights over the last number of years. So we didn't ask what kind of change. I'm going to say we want to discuss positive change for human rights and civil rights. I want you to know that one idea that's on the table is to pass H.R. 3717. That's the Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act. It is before Congress right now. I ask you to look at information about that online, especially at Dog Justice for Mentally Ill. Let us now discuss what changes we feel should be made in the justice system to make life better and improve life, not just for the people who are incarcerated, but for taxpayers who are being charged $80 billion per year to incarcerate 2.3 million people. This is a change that not only people who are affected and negatively impacted by the prison system should be concerned about, but these are changes that all taxpayers should be concerned about, because California is going bankrupt under the weight of its huge prison budget. This same thing is going to happen in Florida. It's going to happen all over, because the individuals who are passing these tough-on-crime laws, many of our judges, many of our lawmakers are prison investors. So they want to raise more money for prisons, because doing so is more money in their own stock portfolios. The first change I would suggest is that if you are a prison investor, you need to be kicked out of office. You got no business being a public service servant and a prison investor. Also, the companies that are using prison labor to escape paying minimum wage should find that they have to pay it anyway, because they should have to pay minimum wage even to prisoners. And the money can be used for the prisoner's victims. The money can be used to pay for their own incarceration, and it can be used for their minor children that they had to leave behind so that these children don't become a taxpayer burden, and it should be used for their reentry fund so they won't leave prison with only $25 and no way of support. So those are two of my suggestions. I have others. My name is Mary Love Justice, so look for it online. But I want to hear some more from you who have called in today, and I want to go down the list. And you just give me, please, one or two suggestions as to how we can make positive change in the prison system. I'm going to begin at 41. That's Ms. Valerie. Ms. Valerie? Okay, let's go to Holly Austin, 3066. What do you suggest for positive change?
Any positive change, I don't want people to turn a blind eye into what is going on. This is illegal. It's cruel. People who have mental illness are people, too. I'm assuming, I could be wrong, that everybody has a family member that has some type of mental illness, or if you have suffered from depression or anything. This should not be able to keep going on. This is illegal activity, what is happening to these people. People being killed, people being tortured. It has to stop. I think the only positive thing would be these agencies that say they want to help really do the job. These senators that say that they want to really help really do the job, and that's where the positive changes would occur. That's my opinion.
Thank you, Ms. Holly. 8072, what changes do you want to see happen in the criminal justice system?
Well, we need to take and really look at these politicians that we're electing. If you can get to one of their rallying meetings when they're running and start asking questions about these issues, we're going to find out where they stand. And if they're not standing for us, then we don't need to be electing them. And then we should put a campaign on to not let them get elected. Because like you say, if they're investing in prisons, they're lining their own pockets at our expense. And people are not getting what their tax dollars are being paid for. We pay taxes to be take care of these prisoners out there. And like you say, they need to be treated responsibly. And if you can't hire officers that work in these correction facilities without getting some kind of mental background on these guys, because lots of times they can pass an easy test. They give them a simple test. I know at the prison here, a psychological test, and if they pass it, well, they can go in. Well, I knew two guys that worked out there shouldn't even be there because their temperament is so out of whack, it's ridiculous. They can't even mind their own tempers in their own homes, around their own families. Why should they be allowed to go out there and work with prisoners? I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. And, you know, these politicians think, oh, well, we closed all the mental hospitals because now we can put them in prison and we can save even more money because we don't have to maintain a mental hospital. Well, years ago when this state became a statehood back in 1912, there was an issue before the state Senate, and one was to build a university in Phoenix or Tucson or have a mental hospital in either one of the places. Well, Phoenix won for the mental hospital, and Tucson got the state university at that time. It was a humongous mental hospital down on 24th Street in Van Buren. I've taken prisoners there. It's a prison reception center now. They turn it into a prison reception. They come in, they're supposed to be getting mental evaluations before they send them out to the different prisons throughout the state. You know, they wasted a perfectly good hospital. They turned all the mental patients loose. When I worked for the Sheriff's Department here, I was told if we picked up a mental patient, which we got a lot of them coming through here, because this is I-40, old Route 66, and it's the first big town they come to when they come out of California, we'd get a lot of mental patients. We were told, book them into the jail, we'd hold them there for 4 or 5 days, and then they would give them a bus ticket to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and dump them on them. And Albuquerque, New Mexico, did the same thing. They would put them in jail and pass them on to the next biggest city from Albuquerque. This was a going thing back in the 80s, in the early 90s. They transferred them out. Then all of a sudden, you know, there was the money-making issue. Oh, well, we get paid for keeping these people incarcerated. Ah, we can make money off of this. So let's find out charges, and you should read some of these charges that they could charge a mental patient, and a lot of them are incapable of understanding what they're being charged with. And the way these judges put some of these charges out there, you know, these people don't know the difference, and if they do get a public defender, he don't care. You know, I mean, this is... We need to get into investigating these problems for these people, and we need to get politicians involved and let them understand where we stand on this. Because if we don't, this is only going to continue until the good Lord comes back for us. That's all I can say about that. It's just, you know, it's absurd. It's just a merry-go-round that keeps going around and around with serving nobody. And we, people who are victims, and I consider myself a victim of this society that's allowed these people to get away with murder, and these other people out there whose sons and daughters have died or been illegally incarcerated because of their mental stability, is a bunch of baloney. That's really cruel and inhumane treatment. And being treated as slaves. They got away with it here now because some people pitched a bitch about it, and so now they pay the prisoners a couple of bucks. They put it in a bank account now, so when they get released, they got more than $25 in their pocket when they get released. And the jail does it, and the prison does it, because we see them in the orange suits out here weeding the highways and cleaning up the trash.
Thank you for speaking up, Mr. Burgess, and I want to hear more about your son's case. I didn't get to hear your testimony regarding your own son's murder because at the time I was receiving someone who was coming to my house. So I look forward to listening to this tape, and I invite everyone who's on the line, everyone who's listening by computer, I want you to sit down and listen to this tape through again. And I want you to please write to your representative, your congressperson, and ask them to support H.R. 3717. That's the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act. That bill will provide more inpatient beds for people with mental illness. Now, many of you who don't have loved ones who are mentally ill think, oh, that doesn't pertain to me. And I want you to know that there are families right now in Santa Barbara, California, who thought that mental illness didn't pertain to them either until Mr. Elliot Roger, a mentally ill young man, had a mental health crisis that the police would not help his family with, and he killed their loved one. So mental illness is an issue that touches everyone in society, whether or not you have someone who has that condition. We all need to be concerned about treatment being available for people who are having mental health crisis. And that's what H.R. 3717 will do. The second thing it will do is it will provide AOT programs, because we know that there are a great many people with severe mental illness who will not choose to stay on their medication or their psychiatric treatment once they are released from hospitals and jail. They choose not to. Why do they choose not to? Well, you know, that's stupid. Why does a squirrel chew nuts? Okay? Because he's a squirrel. Why do they choose not to stay on their psychiatric treatment? Because they're mentally ill. Okay? They are who they are. They have a health deficiency. They need someone else to make their treating decisions. So therefore, people who leave jails and hospitals who have been treated for mental illness behind bars need to stay on their treatment program so they don't experience another crisis and have to return to a hospital or return to jail. And so they need social workers in order to see that they are staying on their medication. It's much cheaper to provide a social worker to go back and visit the household of someone who's mentally ill and even perhaps to take their levels and see if they've been taking their medicine than it is to provide incarceration for that person. So let's be real and acknowledge that people need AOT programs to stay on their treatment and also provide for their subsistence assistance. You can keep maybe 20 mental patients in a group home for less than what it costs you to keep one mentally ill person behind bars for 6 months. So they're spending our money to be cruel to people. Let's say stop it. It doesn't matter whether you have this issue in your family or not. Let's put our foot down and say you won't make money off of America's mentally ill people because that is immoral and inhuman. And I will not put up with you spending my tax money that way. So I want to go on and give someone else a chance to talk about what's necessary. I do want to say that H.R. 3717 also provides for relaxation of some of the HIPAA rules that keep family members from knowing their loved one's condition. And it also provides for CIT training to remove the excuse that police officers and prison officers use by saying that they were not trained in how to handle people with mental health conditions. We know that that's just a lie and an excuse. Anybody knows not to drag a mentally ill man in a shower and turn on boiling water. Anybody knows not to taser a man who's already strapped to a restraint chair. We know they're lying. So let's just remove that excuse by giving all the officers and the prison guard CIT training, which is crisis intervention team training. So I want to go on and give someone else an opportunity to tell what they think is important, what change is important regarding prisons and jails and the criminal justice system in America. The line is open, 5405. Would you like to tell what you think needs to be done regarding injustice in the justice system?
You talking to me?
5405.
I'm not
Anna. Who is this, Anna?
Valerie.
Oh, hey, Valerie. You go ahead and tell us what you've changed, you think is important in the criminal justice system to make it safer for people, especially people with mental illness, but really all prisoners.
Time
to go ahead and tell us that.
You know, I know they're all related, and whenever you go on a website for Department of Corrections, they're inviting you into a family. They're united. We're not a family in prison, and they'll be the first ones to tell you that. The only change that I could see is someone from an advocacy, even maybe multiple, that could go in, that could have the right to go into these prisons unannounced. Because 90% of the time, inmates are aware of when an audit's being done because they're told to be cleaning and scrubbing and painting and peeling wax off of floors and just getting it ready so when they come for the inspection, they can pass. Only the government can do that. And you have to have someone, an outside person to come in that can go in and see and feel and know what is going on in that environment because it's an exaggerated environment. You're forced to live in them conditions. And unless someone outside of the government is inspecting these jails and prisons, You're beating a dead horse. That's the only thing that I can think of that would change because, like I said, I was there. I've lived it, and I've seen it, and I've seen a lot of bad things.
Well, thank you very much. I want to thank all of you for coming to Human Rights Demand. Come back again every weekday at 3 p.m., Friday at 6:30 p.m., including Saturday and Sunday at 3 p.m., Come back to Human Rights Demand, and let's continue our discussion regarding positive change in America where human rights should be valued, appreciated, and protected. God bless you, and I appreciate you if you will share this link with your friends and online group. Good day to you.
Hello?
Yes. I'm still here, Valerie.
Mr. Burgess.
I was
so scared I wasn't going to get a hold of you. I'm so happy that you got to get on there. And I'm going to also tell the other people that call in about your case as well. And I'm going to give them your phone number as well because they got lawyers and everything.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
I know
you,
it's...
Mr. Burden. Thank you, Valerie. Thank you, all guests.
Mary.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to say so much more about this litigation. Oh, I wanted to put some names out there.
I understand. And we're glad to have you at Human Rights Demand. Don't let this be your last visit. Please come back
Absolutely not. You kidding me? Are you talking about my son? My flesh and blood. Just like you said, I used to wipe his butt. They didn't. So, you know,